Hard Drive DL is brought to you by Discover. Visit them at discover.com.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Thanks for checking out Hard Drive DL, the Hard Drive Radio podcast. My name is Paulie Walnuts. Thank you so much for joining us for this awesome episode where our guest is Ben Bruce of Asking Alexandria. Lou Brutus got some time with Ben to talk about the new album, and of course Danny's return to the band, very exciting, and all the cool stuff that goes along with that. Let's take a listen.
I'm Lou Brutus, always glad to welcome Ben Bruce from Asking Alexandria to the show. Ben, how are you, lad?
I am great. I am back. I'm here again. You missed me.
I did. Now then, let's talk about the band. Now, this is fifth studio album. Why is this one self-titled, though?
Okay, so there's a number of reasons that it's self-titled. The main one being, we're lazy. I'm just joking. Basically, you know, I mean, it's very public, all the turmoil we've been through with the band, the semi sort of breakup with Danny leaving, departing for an album. And when we got back together within this time, we were just like, this is it. Like, we are going for this. This is it for us. We are doing this. Not that we weren't before, but, you know, it's go time. And so it was almost like we started again and we'd found this new lease on life. And it felt like when we were recording this album, it felt like it was our debut album. And so we kind of just wanted to reintroduce the world to Asking Alexandria, and our platform was this record.
How frustrating was it for you guys when Danny dropped out for a while? Because prior to him going, and maybe it was just me, and I don't know, but it seemed that you guys were just on the verge of exploding here in the U.S., and it seemed to retard growth or evolution. And I was glad that you seemed to be back on track. I mean, what was the feeling inside the band on that kind of thing?
It was devastating, you know, and I was so pissed off, and I was so annoyed, and I was hurt, and I was upset. And like you said, it was frustrating because I don't know if you remember, but we were on From Death to Death and Cycle, and we had just serviced Moving On to Radio, and it was killing it, and it was climbing the charts. And we made it to top five, and we made it to number four. And our radio guy was like, this is it. This is going to be your first number one single. Here we go. It's go time. And everyone was like, these guys are poised for arenas. You know, we were going out with bands like Slipknot and Avenged, and everything was great. And then it was like the carpet just got pulled out from under us. And as soon as Danny left, the song got pulled from radio. So it peaked to number four, and it should have gone to number one. And, you know, it was like we were tumbling backwards, faster than we'd ever gone forwards, and it was kind of scary, and like you say, you know, very frustrating. But you know, we picked ourselves up, dusted ourselves off, and we carried on. And I'm so glad we did, because that time away from Danny allowed all of us to grow and learn a lot about ourselves and each other. And I think it was just a necessary time apart from each other for us to just regroup and regather.
Good, and that was a good answer, and it makes me feel better for you guys, if you don't mind me saying so. And I just say that from a fan standpoint, you know. Tell me where you recorded, who you recorded with, and sort of the nuts and bolts of making the record.
We actually recorded, it was the first time we didn't record with Joey Sturgis. Yeah. We actually went to our dear friend Matt Good, who's the founder and guitarist in From First to Last. We'd known Matt for years. We'd been on tour with From First to Last, and as we were young kids, and we were growing up and coming up in the scene and everything, and you know, we kept in touch, and we were just really good friends. And obviously, when From First to Last kind of stopped or took a break or whatever you want to call it, he started recording bands and stuff. And I went in to help write a song for a young rapper called Whitney Payton. I went in to write a song with Matt for Whitney. And I had such a good time working with him in the studio. I was like, wow, the energy is great. We're comfortable with each other because we're friends. We work really well together. You've got to do the new Asking record. And, you know, one thing led to another. A lot of people talk and a lot of stuff gets said at the time, but this actually came to fruition. And, you know, I couldn't be more excited with how it came out. We just had a blast with Matt. It wasn't like work at all. It was like going around to your buddy's house every day and just cracking open some beers and having a really, really good time, which I think made for a better record, because it wasn't work. We weren't told what to write. We weren't given a schedule. We just were having fun.
Who did the cover art and the layouts and stuff for the record?
We had a guy called Daniel McBride. He did the layout. The concept, actually, we came up with, our bassist Sam Bentley came up with the concept of the five-sided shape. It kind of just stemmed from there, you know. I mean, it's our fifth album, so there's the five sides. And then it kind of led to, well, with the five original members are back together again. And we figured out, you know, without any one of us, the shape is incomplete. It doesn't quite work. And so, you know, that's basically what the shape represents. And then obviously the key encased in this whole thing is, again, just from experiences of what we've been through. You know, we always had the key, so to speak, and we're on our way, moving in the right direction. But there was always something holding us back. And normally, for better or for worse, that was ourselves with drinking and drugs and just being idiots for a very long time. And we felt like we were so close to everything, but it was just out of reach and out of grasp for us. And that's basically what the key behind the glass represents. We could see it. We could see where we needed to be and what we needed to get to, but we just could never quite make it before.
When you get a finished package in your hands, an album that you have worked on, and it's got great artwork and there's great symbolism about your life and your career in there, do you get the same kind of thrill now that you did from like a first record years ago?
Oh, 100%. More so with this album than any other album since our debut. It's funny, I keep saying to people, doing this album felt exactly like it did from start to finish as when we were doing our debut album, Stand Up and Scream, you know. And it's funny because when I got that final product in my hand and I could see the visuals come together with the music on the disc, it made it all just fall into place and tied it all together. And it just... the album somehow to me sounded better once I could see the artwork whilst I was listening as well. It was really exciting.
Do you ever have like nightmares right before an album package comes out and it's final and it can't be fixed, that somebody's name is going to be spelled wrong or there's going to be some sort of F up on it someplace?
It's funny you should say that, actually, because on our second album, I believe it was our second album, Reckless and Relentless, I proofread everything. And for everyone. And at the time, our guitarist had a girlfriend who none of us were very fond of. And I don't think she was very fond of us, to be honest. And I knew it wasn't going to work out. And I was like, this silly cow. And I changed his thanks. He was like, thanks to my wonderful girlfriend. Rah, rah. And I was like, nope, not happening. So I changed it. I can't remember what I wrote. Probably wasn't very nice. And I sent that in and it got submitted. And we got the album back. And he was like, what the hell? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know how that could have happened. And then, like, a month or two later, they broke up. And he was like, oh, man, I'm so glad you changed that. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, dude.
Mates know best.
Everyone needs to go back and buy that record now just to check out.
Just to go
the,
look at it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to dig it out. I'm going to dig it out. You know what? I'd love to throw some song titles at you and anything that you can... give me insight-wise into the creation of the tune would be great. The perfect place to start would be Into the Fire.
Into the Fire was a crazy one. That was later on in the recording process, because we took it song by song this time. We didn't go in with any songs written. We did it song by song. And by the time we got to Into the Fire, I was in a headspace. I was like, I want to base songs around just big, memorable guitar riffs, like, you know, Enter Sandman. You hear that riff, and it goes throughout the song, and you just know it the second it starts. And so that's where, you know, we just do, 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 do. And the whole song was just based around that one riff, and it built from there. So I think that might be the biggest hook on that song is the guitar riff, which is awesome.
Rise Up.
Same thing, actually. Rise Up, I wrote right after Into the Fire. Again, I was in that headset where I was like, okay, big, memorable riff. And that's why it starts with just that huge, thundering riff. And we wanted that song to be, like, triumphant. We were like, we were all hopped up and stoked to be back in the studio together. And I was like, we need a song that shows that, that just oozes that passion and that fire that's been relit in all of us. And I feel like that song, you know, even without the vocals, they're the cherry on top, obviously, but even without the lyrics and the vocals, you can just hear the amount of just energy and fire breathing through that song.
Ben, a quick aside, when you're writing stuff, are you ever thinking in the back of your head, what is this going to be like to play live? Do you ever change things in the studio based on what you think it's going to sound like when you got to play it live? How does that whole thing work?
We've actually been that way inclined ever since we started writing. We were always like, okay, well, if we can't pull it off live, we're not doing it. A lot of people use a lot of trickery in the studio and then worry about it later to learn live. But we're always like, no, we want this to sound its biggest and its best live. We want the album and the record to be like whetting your appetite for our live show. So it's like, okay, I've heard the songs. They need to sound better live than they do on the album. Because to me, there's nothing worse than hearing a band on a record and then you go to the show and they can't play the songs and there's parts missing. So we just try to make sure that whatever energy we capture in the studio, we can capture that same energy and essence live as well. So that's always at the forefront of my head when I'm writing a record for Oscar.
Give me an example of a band that you loved growing up that maybe you saw live early, you know, formative years for you, that were just as good live that they were on the record. Like somebody that you loved their recordings and then they just blew you away with the live show.
I mean, there are so many examples of that, but the one that really stands out, like my earliest memory of it, was Machine Head. I remember that album, Through the Ashes of Empires, came out, and I just loved the album when I was younger, and it stayed in my CD player in my car for like a year straight. And this is when I was living in Dubai still, and they came out and they played Dubai, and I remember they opened with Imperium. Oh my God, the energy was palpable, and then the whole band kicked in, and the lights came on, and I was just blown away. It was absolutely insane.
Good answer. Let me throw a couple of other song titles at you. Tell me about Creating Empire.
Oh, right. I mean, that was a whole different kettle of fish for us. You know, I mean, with this album, like I said, we were given no limitations, no time constraints, no nothing. And we all listened to so many different kinds of music. You know, we listened to rap and R&B and hip hop to blues and country and rock and metal, and we listened to just about everything. And so, you know, we wanted to push ourselves and be like, okay, well, let's try something different here. And we started writing that song, and as the drums were being written, I was like, this has a very hip-hop feel to it. You know, we never wrote it intending for there to be any rap or anything on it. I felt a hip-hop sort of vibe coming through from the drums, much like old Limp Bizkit or old Linkin Park even. And I was like, how cool would it be if we gave this song to a hip-hop producer to mix and just see how they would mix a rock song? I feel like that would be really interesting. And then Danny was like, well, why don't we take it one step further and collaborate with a rapper or a hip-hop artist and see where that takes us? And, you know, like I said, we always have some different kinds of music. We're like, yeah, like, why not? Let's give it a go. And Danny knew the kid Binks, and I heard his own solo stuff, and I was like, man, this kid is good. Like, he's really talented. And just for fun, we had him send us over a verse, and we were like, hey, what would you do with this? You know, out of curiosity. And we got it back, and the message was so uplifting and just so positive, which I just feel is so needed in this day and age. We just fell in love with it, and we were like, no, this is it. This is staying.
Excellent. One other tune I want to ask you about is the hidden track, Explicit.
Okay. I mean, that's clearly a massive joke, but yeah. I think basically what had happened there was, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and we were in the studio still, and we were tired, and we'd had a few beers, and we got to reminiscing, and we were like, oh man, just reminiscing about how we used to write music and stuff like that, and we quite literally just, I guess we started just playing around and messing around, and Matt hit record, and you know, we didn't know. And we just, that song just came out. Like, Danny made up the vocals on the spot, the guitar's all made up on the spot, the drums are made up on the spot. And we were just joking around. And Danny starts like just the most obnoxious, ridiculous lyrics you could ever think of, just falling out of his mouth, and we're all cracking up. And I stopped playing my guitar, and James is still going, and he starts rinsing, and Danny's like yelling at him down the mic. And we're like, oh man, that's hilarious. We should probably call it a quits and go to bed. We're crazy and delirious right now. And Matt was like, I recorded all of that. And we were like, that's amazing. And we decided to not mix it or edit it or do anything. We were like, let's leave it just like that. That's why the drums are so raw and the timing's probably all over the place. But it was just so funny.
Excellent. Good. Now, looking ahead to the tour, you guys really have a very long list of very, very good songs. How do you start narrowing it down and working out a set list each night?
Oh, man. It's the hardest thing in the world, especially now, you know, on album 5. We're like, well, like you said, there's so many songs that have reacted so well around the world. There's so many fan favorites. We obviously have favorites, and we're told this is how long you have to play. And thankfully, we're in a point in our career now where more often than not, our set times are quite long. But there are still times where we'll go to countries that we haven't been to very much and we're lower down on a bill at a festival or something. They're like, you've got 30 minutes or 25 minutes. And we're like, whoa, that's not even half of one album. And we have 5 albums. So I don't know. I feel like we just try and balance it to, we want everyone that comes to watch an Arsene Andrew show to leave having had the best time of their lives, you know? So I always try and think about, if I went to see like Metallica or something, and as much as I'm sure they're sick of playing Enter Sandman, I'd be bummed if they didn't play it. Everyone would be, you know, it's just such a staple in their career. So we try and find that line where it's like, it needs to be enjoyable for us still, but we want everyone to have a really good time. And we don't want people to come to the show and leave going, oh man, they didn't play that song, you know? So we try and play the ones that we know that people expect and want to hear. And then also the ones that we love to play as well, and just try and find like a happy medium and a balance.
Thank you once again to Ben Bruce of Asking Alexandria, and of course to Lou Brutus for doing that wonderful interview, and of course to you for listening. I will say that they recently came through. They're on the road with Black Veil Brides and Crown the Empire, and the live show is really something to behold. I mean, they are on their game. Danny is in great form. It's good to see him back with the band, and there's this massive video wall behind the band, and there's lots of cool stuff going on there. So it's a really cool show. If they come through your town, go see them. You will not be disappointed. In the meantime, if you want more Hard Drive DL, you can check us out on Blog Talk Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. You can also check us out on the web, harddriveradio.com, and at Hard Drive Radio on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Until next time, thanks for listening. I'm Paulie Walnuts, and this was Hard Drive DL.
More episodes of Hard Drive DL at harddriveradio.com. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app and keep listening.